Good afternoon, everybody. It's Yvonne Silver with the Words, Women, and Wisdom radio show and podcast. And today, if you haven't joined us before, you're going to be in for a treat. We are all about sharing uplifting stories of women who have they're now doing amazing things. And the way they got to be doing those amazing things is rising through some sort of tragedy to triumph. They've been in a situation that was somewhat chaotic, and now they are on the other side of that, and they've risen to confidence. And I love showcasing amazing women around the country that have come from all different kinds of backgrounds in this way, because there are amazing women doing fabulous work, courageous women. And today, my beautiful guest is Karen Sherbert. Karen, are you on the line?
I am.
Awesome. So it's great to connect. We were actually at an event just this morning. So this is an interesting day. I am loving having multiple connections with you.
Well, and I have to tell you that it was a brilliant event this morning. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you.
It was wonderful to hear and learn from you this morning.
Thank you. Well, I really enjoy hosting those Bold Women Leaders events here in Calgary, and I do have another one coming up November 6th, so we'll see if we can make that work as well.
This is
an opportunity to get to know more about Karen. So just a little bit of background, if you didn't have a chance to read the show page, life for Karen didn't exactly start out on what she describes as the right foot. So I'm going to let her talk about her story. Suffice to say that there has been a journey, a passionate journey, that drove Karen and her husband, John, to start the Safe Haven Foundation of Canada. And she currently has a beautiful location. I was out there in the countryside just a couple of weeks ago, and she's using her resilience to empower other girls. 80-plus girls have now gone through the programs that Karen and her team operate through the Safe Haven Foundation, and I'm sure that they have impacted countless other women, girls, as inspiration, and those ladies now are alumni who have been through the programs, and they mentor others and become it's a beacon of light in what can be a very dark world. So the story we're sharing today is all about survival. Actually, no, it's more than that. It's more than a story of survival. It's a story of a husband and wife who stood side by side and took on the world to pave the way for at-risk youth. Ooh, that's a mouthful. I need more coffee. At-risk youth to write their own success story. So, you know, Karen now is a role model, a mentor, a humanitarian, and just last week I was lucky enough to see her awarded a Women of Inspiration Award as well. So she's getting noticed for the work that she's doing with the Safe Haven Foundation, and the kindness that I feel when I'm around Karen is a beautiful representation of how others, I'm sure, feel safe around her. So she's at the helm of the foundation with a steadfast commitment to continue to shape a better and brighter future for all of us. So welcome, Karen. Lovely to have you on the show.
It's so great to be here.
Mm-hmm. So let's, you know, you're doing some great things here. I am always curious to start at the beginning of the journey and learn a lot more about you as a person and how some of your experiences early on in life have shaped what it is that you're doing today. So this is your opportunity to showcase who you are, how you got here, and tell us a little bit about the journey. And I've got my tissues ready because I know this is a big one.
I've got my tissues ready too. I came from a very dysfunctional family and a very troubled background. My parents divorced when I was two, and at 5 years old was sent to live with Bill, my father. And it was an environment that was far from what a child, what you would envision a child's life should be. Our household was was rife with abuse and domestic violence and alcohol and child abuse. And I, for the first, until I was 16, I simply existed. I lived in fear of my father's and my stepmother's rage. Wow, emotions are coming already, right? But it was, it's so easy to go back there, you know? It's just, it, in a blink of an eye, I go back to those days, Yvonne. But it was, I had no choice but to run away. And I left home. It was in the middle of January, very cold winter night in Winnipeg. And I ran away. And to the point where I was literally running down the street with my father chasing after me. And I knew that with every step that I was running away from him in that house, that I was running a step closer to safety, mm-hmm. that there was something out there that was better than what I knew. And that was really, I guess, that night, it was January 16th, 1975, I think it was. I knew that that was really the night that I started to live.
Mm. It's interesting how right away there's a learning there for anyone listening is, you know, sometimes it's not about running away from something so much as running to something. And so if you're in a situation where you're feeling that you don't have as much control over it and you want to make a change, you know, what is it that you want to run towards? You know, go for the light. I don't know if you ever saw that little cartoon. Oh, shoot. The name will come back to me later, but it was a cartoon about girls' emotions. And there was one particular moment where she was seeing this tiny, tiny, tiny speck of light in the darkness. And right away, I knew what it was that they were trying to express through film. I'll think of the name of it afterwards. Yeah. So you had something to run to. You didn't know what it was yet. So then what happened?
Well, I mean, that first night, I stayed in a bus shelter. And that was my home for the first night. And it was, you know, I go back there and I remember those days. And actually, we just did a video just a little while ago in terms of For Safe Haven Foundation. And Shaw was out with us and we were doing a video on what happened in my life and my journey. And I stood where I stood at when I was 16. And the bus shack that night was my home. And it was so many different emotions because part of me wished that my father and stepmother would come find me and say, I'm so sorry. This will never happen again. And there was another part of me that didn't want that to happen because I'd heard that so many times I didn't believe it anymore. And I didn't want the police to come because the police had come to our place so many times over the years and they never did anything. So I didn't have my faith and trust in them back then. Times were so different back then. And that was where I spent the first night. When I woke up from a troubled sleep, it was, I guess I knew that somewhere deep inside me, I knew that I was going to be okay, that everything was happening for a reason and it was time for me to start figuring my life out. Mm. I was very fortunate that I had a few incredible girlfriends and their families, and I had a big brother, and none of them ever turned their back on me. So when I would go visit my girlfriend, Linda, and her family, there would be seven of us sitting around a dinner table. And I would see what family was about, where you laugh and you love and you live and you joke and you're safe. And it was like, so this is what I want in life. It's not what I had. This is what should be the normal. And I had a brother that was just, you know, he was 20 when I knocked on his door one night and said, I don't have anywhere else to stay. And he, you know, said, this can be a place for you to stay too. So I kind of lived in transit. I kind of what we know nowadays is the couch surfer, which is the invisible homeless. It's the person that stays in different places, never wanting to outstay our welcome. Because then they're not, where else are we going to go? Couch surfing has a time limit typically. I was fortunate enough with the people in my life and the community that I had that time limit, went on for a year and a half until I graduated from high school. I was able to get a full-time job and start to support myself. I had advocates who worked with me to make sure that I passed high school. And I, you know, when I left home, it was like, let's be real, it was like, I don't have to go to school now, right? Because school is not going to call the house. And And I missed a lot of classes until one of my girlfriends showed up when I was staying at my brother's one night and knocked on the door and said, you've got two choices. You can go to school looking like this, or you've got 5 minutes to make yourself look presentable. One way or the other, you're going to school today. And she started coming. If I wasn't staying at her place, she would come to my brother's and get me, and we would go to school. And she advocated for me with the teachers to make sure that they understood enough of what I was doing. I was holding down three jobs while I was trying to go to school. And the community just came together to support me in ways that I was just so blessed.
Mm. It's so interesting. You know, we don't know what we don't have, right? If we haven't grown up seeing the beauty of family love, then it's really hard to imagine what that can look like. Even in our session this morning, we were talking about the importance of role models, you know, seeing other women leaders operating well and what's possible. And then we can start to believe it, because given your experience, I'm sure, you know, you didn't necessarily have that clarity. You know what you didn't want, but you didn't necessarily know what you wanted until you saw it in action.
And you're absolutely right. And further that, I didn't know what love was. I mean, my view of love, what I had seen for so many years, was pretty warped. Mm-hmm. And that is what love is. I don't want love. You know, I was petrified of it because it just seemed, it came with such pain.
Right.
So it took, you know, a lot of years and a lot of counseling and a lot of people in my life before I really understood enough about what love is and feel free enough to love and be loved.
Yeah.
It's been a journey.
Yeah. And nugget three already, I'm taking away from this, even, you know, already brief conversation, is the importance of having an advocate and having that tough love to put the boundaries in place. And kids, I think, you know, no matter whether they're kids or young teenagers, still benefit by having a framework, right? You can have this choice or this choice, and, you know, which one are you going to take? Because, you know, staying in a bus shelter and sleeping there at night is not an option. Absolutely. And we're going to take a stand to support you and make sure that you have what you need to flourish.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's so much. Oh, sorry, go on.
So how old were you when you left home?
I was 16.
16, yeah. Well, I was 17, so different circumstances. I can relate a little bit, though, working through some of the challenges of growing up in a dysfunctional household. And as I shared a little bit just today, my mom did the best job that she could possibly do, but with a father that was PTSD after the war, coming back with, you know, taking a bullet in Dunkirk, had really twisted up his perspective. And there were thousands of men coming back then. They just did not have the capacity to treat them all. And so she did the best that she could do. I don't think we ever sat down and talked about what her home life was like growing up, but I know for sure that she loved her dad deeply, and he was an honorable man. So it was probably quite a shock for her to not see how her own marriage was unfolding and what it was doing to the kids. I left at 17 because I wasn't popular at home. It seemed like whatever I did, it was annoying my dad. He didn't like it when I was in the house. He didn't like it when I was out gallivanting about, as he called it, on my adventures, as I referred to it. So, hey, okay, I'm leaving. I'm going then. Yeah. So the advocating is so, so important. So at what point, Karen, do you think that things really started to turn around for you?
Well, I mean, life started for me the day I ran away.
Right.
Without a doubt. And high school was, as much as in those initial stages, those first couple of months, I didn't go a lot of times in the morning. High school was, it was my safety zone. I felt safe there.
Mm. You know,
the teachers knew enough that I was living in a few different places, that they could put two and two together. But back then, people didn't talk about child abuse. You know, those were taboo subjects, because if you talked about it, you were going to have to do something about it. And you know, I had support with my jobs, so that they too knew that I was not having a stable place to live, so that there was just the extra hours that would come and responsibilities and promotions started to come. And by the time I graduated from high school, I was ready to say, okay, world, bring it on. What's next?
Bring it on. Well, certainly, I could have gone two ways with my experience. I could have taken on the same character as my mom and been very meek. And I, for whatever reason, had that spark inside me that said, no, I am absolutely not going to live like that. I don't want to be in a situation like my mom was in. And so she was my original, what I call, unmentor. She showed me the path, but in the opposite way, by showing me what not to do and what was not acceptable. And, you know, certainly when it came to having a loving family household, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of friends in school because I couldn't invite them back to my house. You know, my dad would, you know, be evaluating them based on their status. You know, were their parents, were they homeowners in the community? Were they upright, upstanding citizens? Or in England, they actually have, you know, multiple societal structures. So they have this class system. And if you were living in the poor part of town and you were living on a council estate, government funded housing, in his eyes, you were not worthy to join our household and be part of my friend's circle, which was really unfortunate because I had a great relationship with an amazing girl who lived down the road on the council estate. Her and her family with five kids. It was a great, loving home environment. And here we were living in, you know, middle-class suburbia, and it was not a loving environment. I would have traded places in a heartbeat. Yeah. So you went back, you did your schooling. Just remind me, what was it you took in school that has then started off on, you know, giving you the wings to head down a different path?
After high school, I started right, and I actually left. I got permission to leave high school 2 weeks early to start a job in the government. Started out in a position that was at the lowest level. It was a clerk typist one. The position required 80 words a minute. I could type 20, but the people that hired me saw something in me, and they wanted to give me a chance. And those things are ingrained in me now because that's what I always wanted to do for other people, because I had people that saw something in me and gave me opportunities, and it changed my life. It opened doors that would have never otherwise been opened. So I spent the first 7 years at the government, and I took courses at nighttime at university just on human resources and psychology and those kinds of things. Never got a degree, but certainly graduated from the School of Hard Knocks.
Mm.
So I was with the government for 7 years before I moved out into the fashion and modeling and beauty industry. And from there into marketing and media and event planning, and it just continued to snowball. So I ended up finding myself in Toronto, not finding myself, but putting myself into Toronto to continue carrying my dreams up the career ladder, and spent the next 8 years of my life there.
Wow.
In that time, it was only, I guess I was probably 25 or 26 when I started to realize, wow, I really don't have my shit together. I need help, you know. And I first went to Al-Anon to start understanding the ramifications of living with alcoholic parents and what that means. And I realized that wasn't enough. And I started to go for counseling. And I've had years and years of counseling with different counselors to really help me understand that what I went through as a child wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
And that love doesn't have to be a bad and scary thing. Over the years, I've learned how to love the little girl that never got the love she needed.
Mm. That is so beautiful. Oh, I just want to breathe into that for a moment.
Mm. Yeah.
It's so interesting. I had been interviewing Patricia Morgan recently, and she was talking about her journey with adopting a girl who had, she didn't know it at the time, but later found out that her behavior was being triggered by having fetal alcohol syndrome. And she said, I took so much, you know, I went to counseling so much, I decided I was going to make a career of it, and I became a qualified counselor.
I get it.
Yeah. But it is so, so important to do your own work. And as you're talking there about the the direction and having an advocate and having, you know, one or two people that believe in you. Just recently we had a session, a colleague of mine who is hosting a mentorship platform is from Silicon Valley, and he was up co-hosting an event with me. And, you know, one of his quotable lines is that, you know, just one conversation can change the direction of your life. So, so true. And everybody in the room was nodding with that comment. And that's one reason why I'm such a fan of mentorship. You know, chairing programs, designing mentorship programs, developing collaborative conversations, looking at, you know, what technology will make the matching easier between the protege and the mentor, because it's so, so important when we are crying out for help that the universe provides, and I, you know, whatever you want to call it, I call it the universe, provides you the rope that you need when there is a clear indicator that you're ready to receive it and you're ready to grab it and hold on to it. And it seems like, you know, on your journey, you know, you've also, you know, been on many boards and advisory roles, you know, sharing back what you learned about yourself and your wisdom, been employed as a VP of marketing, you know, expanding your expertise to include operations, strategic planning, and now you're, you know, co-founding this foundation. So you've obviously had massive learnings along the way. If you think back to some of those early days, you know, if there's anyone listening out there who has a teenage girl who is perhaps in similar kind of mindset to where you were at, what would you want to share with them about how they might be able to provide support for another girl?
First and foremost, love them. Listen to them. Realize that and acknowledge parenting is hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you have to do alone. That, you know, now more than ever, there are organizations and there are people out there that can provide support and help so that hopefully you can work things through together. You know, one of the things that we're seeing so right now with so many social service agencies is that they're working hard to do prevention, not even the early intervention, but let's get to the prevention and let's try and work with family unification and staying together. And that there's organizations and really, really good people out there that can help.
Yeah. Well, certainly you know, this summer with my son having some of his medical challenges, you know, I've realized that there is definitely help out there. Sometimes it just feels like it's taking a long, long time to get the referrals to the specialists that you need. So if you think about your own programs and what you're doing now to support young girls, talk a little bit about what the foundation, Safe Haven Foundation, is all about and what kind of work you're doing.
Well, we started Safe Haven Foundation on the very premise of what I wished I would have had when I was 16 and I had left home. And we had done our research and we had found out that in our research that what I had wanted when I was 16 is still very much what girls wanted 20 years ago when we started the foundation and their programs, and it's still the same thing today. And it's love. Unconditional love, I should say, where it's okay to make mistakes and that we're going to be that safety net when you fall, because we all fall, that there's a roof over your head, that you don't have to worry about where your next meal's coming from, that you don't have to hold down 3 jobs, but that you can stay focused on your schooling and education is such a big part of the overall components of Safe Haven Foundation. So really what we do within our programs is we duplicate that of a healthy, caring family environment, where girls come into our homes and they are in a safe environment where they can start facing their trauma and their wounds and starting to heal, where they can start working through these things, where they can complete their education and eventually emerge as incredible self-reliant contributing citizens in our community. And it sounds easy, but then think of what parenting is, and you were just talking about it yourself with your son. Parenting is so hard and so complicated. And you magnify that when you've got children that have been exposed to trauma. You've got 3 teenage girls and a house parent living in a house, and it's really creating a family out of strangers. The results that we see keep us doing what we're doing.
Yeah. Wow. We talked a little bit about, you know, the journey, and you know, you had asked about my book earlier on today and how that came about. So I just want to take a brief break and actually just run the video, which is the video that actually was that was run when I launched my book. It actually was launched overnight as an overnight bestseller. Just see if I can bring this up quickly here. I'm just going to play this short video because it shares a little bit of what you were asking about. You know, how did my book come about? Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations? Because there's a story there. Here we go.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, the New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing, all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request. Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in 4 different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change. The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our heads for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power. Add words that energize and invigorate and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.
So there's the story behind the book.
Fascinating. I'm so looking forward to reading it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was 2 years of my life putting that together, getting up at 5 every morning for 20 minutes of meditation, and then it was almost like I downloaded which words needed to be in the book and then wrote for an hour until my family got up. And so it's been a journey. Yeah. And your life has been a journey. So tell me a little bit more about some of the fundraising that you're doing, because you have a series of events that are coming up that you like to host, and they sound really innovative. So I'm curious to learn more about those.
Absolutely. And, you know, we need to be innovative, and we don't receive government or fee-for-service funding. So every dollar that is spent in the program is a dollar that we have to raise. So it goes far beyond doing grant applications and knocking on doors. We've got an event coming up on October 26th, which is called Supper for Safe Haven. It's our second annual event with this. And the concept is really simple. It's plan a dinner, invite your friends, ask them for a donation or charge them, however you want to do it, and then have an incredible night and make the donation to Safe Haven Foundation to help ensure that the incredible youth that we serve can continue to have a safe place to live their dreams and aspire and achieve the greatest of dreams. So we're hoping that there's probably going to be about 100 dinners this year. And the beauty of it is, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about it's so scalable. We've got some people that are going to have pizza parties for their kids. And we've got one place out in Bridgeland that is hosting a huge dinner where they've already sold out to the community with, I think there's probably about 40 people going to it, and they're charging more money. So, and they've got silent auctions going on and everything. So it really varies, but the idea really is that, you know, supper should be a time, can be a time when we have family celebration where we feel safe and there's laughter and there's love and there's highs and lows and all of that kind of stuff. And there's so many kids out there that don't ever have that. And it's just such a nice tie, and that supper is a warm and safe environment. And the Supper for Safe Haven is an event that is going to have huge impact in terms of our ability to be able to continue to serve the girls that we serve.
Mm, lovely. And I haven't run across that concept before. I've been involved with a number of different foundations and not-for-profit groups that all do different creative things to generate the revenues that will fund their programs. So if somebody wants to tackle that, how do they reach out? Where do they get more information about doing that? How do they connect with you?
Well, they can visit us at safehavenfoundation.ca or supperforsafehaven.com, or they can call us at 403-230-2613. I know that's the archaic way, but I'm kind of old-fashioned, and I talk on the phone a lot. So.
Well, it is all about connection, right? And that's so important, especially when you're, you know, holding the life of a teenager in your hands. You know, it is something that's very personal, and it does require that energy to be felt, that loving connection. It's much harder to build that over the phone, but certainly having a phone conversation is still better than having a text conversation. So, you know, you lose so much of the conversation just on text, right?
You know, when I think of that, and I think of the fundraiser that we've got, the girls, they're made aware of the kinds of fundraising activities that happened, and they know that there's this big Supper for Safe Haven coming. And the message that they get is, wow, community of people out there that believe in me. They don't know me, but they love me and they believe in me and they want to give me these chances. And it's such a powerful message to the girls that we serve. It's empowering to them that it's like, I am worthy. You are worthy.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty when we start sharing and communicating some of this important messaging. And it was lovely to see you receiving a Women of Inspiration Award just last week for the work that you're doing, the contribution that you're making to society. And, you know, certainly when I think about, you know, the environment where I grew up when I was 16, I mean, crikey, we just had a house phone. And that was it. And because I wasn't the one paying for it, my dad was very controlling. If I wanted to make a phone call more than 2 minutes, I had to walk down the road, 10 minutes down the road to the payphone and pump the payphone with coins. Because in England, you pay for every minute you're on the phone. It's not the same way that it operates here. And I spent many, many hours walking back and forth to that phone box just so I could communicate with people, because it was obviously way before the time of cell phones. Yeah. But so, so important for building connection, especially when you're a teenager. You really do need to feel that that sense of community, that sense of being loved, included. It's a huge element. So tell me a little bit as well about some of the programs that you offer. What are you actually teaching those young girls that's the most impactful, do you think?
It would teach them everything from basic life skills, that's, you know, healthcare, personal hygiene, emotional care, to better study habits, to advocating for yourself in the community and learning where you can reach out, because it always takes a community for all of us. We have a therapeutic rec program where girls have the opportunity to apply for boxing, for music lessons, for art lessons, whatever their passion is, or to even just explore those passions. These are opportunities that they've never had before. And to be able to give them those opportunities to experience their passions and start feeling part again of the bigger community. We have, our scholarship programs. So for young women that have graduated from high school and are continuing their post-secondary education, a lot of times youth can't do that if they're being, you know, if they're moving out on their own. We continue to support them. Even if they've moved out on their own and they're working part-time and they're wanting to pursue post-secondary education, we provide them with scholarships. We just had one girl come back recently. She's graduated. We've actually given her two scholarships over the course of the years. One was for marketing. Another was for a legal assistant. She's now wanting to go back to law school. And we were having a conversation, and she said, well, I can't come and ask for a scholarship now. And I said, why? And she goes, well, I'm alumni. I'm no longer living in the homes. And I said, you're still part of our family. And that's part of the beauty of what our programs are, which leads us to the other program, which is our alumni program. And we have at any point in time about 20, at least 20 alumni that are actively engaged in different levels, whether it's some being ambassadors and spokespersons for us at events, mentors for girls that are in the homes. We get together and do different activities. There's 12 alumni. And the girls in the homes, so there's going to be about 25 girls and alumni over at the Havens Way Homes for Thanksgiving this year. We're planning our big Christmas event out in the country where we'll have, last year we had 56 people. We'll probably have more than that. And the part of the beauty of that is that we all want that sense of belonging. And that's one of the many things that makes Safe Haven Foundation so different, is that we provide lifelong relationships. For as long as these girls need us, we're there.
That is so beautiful.
Their family.
For 20 years you've been doing this kind of work. How rewarding is that? How amazing. If you're thinking about some of the key lessons that you've learned in running a successful foundation, what would you share? Because I know a number of my listeners are, you know, contemplating giving back or giving to the community in a bigger way. So, you know, what is perhaps three top tips that you would share with people about running successful foundations?
It's harder than you originally think.
Yes.
My husband and his infinite wisdom figured it out and said, so really all we need to do when we start a Safe Haven Foundation, all we really need to do is raise $750,000, find some land, build a couple homes, hire some house parents, and we're done. And I was like, yeah, I'm not. 20 years later, you know, we're still in the trenches. It is staying true to your passion. It is staying true to your values, identifying your values. It is speaking from the heart and is surrounding yourself with incredible people that want to take ownership in it just as much. And that's one of the things that we've always done. This is not, when the homes were built, these weren't homes that Karen and John built. These were the homes that Calgary built. And Safe Haven Foundation, our Haven's Way programs, these are the programs that Calgarians support. And we haven't ever been able to do it without them. And having and creating that circle, that community is a cornerstone for success.
Mm. You cut out just a little bit there. What was your last sentence sharing?
That surrounding ourselves with the community and them, they are the cornerstone of our success.
Right.
Who and how we are is because, and we exist purely because of the generosity and the passion and graciousness of our donors and our supporters.
Right. Well, I think that passion, passion for that particular cause, I mean, you know, it's part of your journey. How could you not have passion for helping other young girls? Absolutely. Coordinating and operating that for 20 years, that is a big feat. So let's take a moment just to celebrate that and all of the women, young girls along the way that you have helped, you personally, Karen, have helped. It's massive. Yeah. And it has massive ripple effect too. Right. So thank you for dedicating your life to doing this work. It's really, really important. And, you know, the world cannot survive if we don't have more kids, ultimately. I mean, our future depends upon having women who want to engage in having healthy relationships. And some of us have to learn how to do that just based on the way that we were raised ourselves. We didn't see it. We don't necessarily know what it looks like. I remember when I was, we just celebrated our 13th wedding anniversary, my husband and I. And I remember in our early dating days, I would be as a self-employed HR consultant. I was doing a lot of that kind of work back then. He would come over and I just need to finish something. And, you know, an hour later, I'm still on the computer and he's tapping me on the shoulder saying, honey, you need to get off the computer and have a life. Because I had gone through, 17 years of previous marriage and decided that I felt like I was suffocating and needed to break free from that. And at the time, because I wasn't in a relationship, I just buried myself in my work. And I'm sure that's not an uncommon thread, right? So until I had a really nice, loving, supporting relationship again, that the work took front and center stage and got a lot of work done. However, I really believe, especially hearing a conversation this morning with some of the other ladies in the corporate arena in the Bold Women's event, that we still need to continue to look for ways to have what work-life balance is actually all about. And for me, working with clients, it's really sometimes defining what does that look like for you? Because, at your stage in running a foundation, maybe having, older kids yourself, it's different than when you have a young baby and an aging parent, right? So what does balance look like? What does success in business look like? You come up with your own measure and then measure up against that. Don't try and be measuring up against somebody else's criteria that they've set for themselves. That's a key piece.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So final nuggets, what would you share, looking back over your life, if you had to share, three things that you found yourself repeating to your girls over and over and over again that really have supported them and shifted their thinking in a more positive way, what nuggets would you share with the listeners?
Believe in yourself. Know that you are worthy of so much more than you've been told you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the biggest, that words are devastating to people when they're harsh. And the other one is to learn how to love yourself and that if you can learn to love yourself and feel safe enough to love yourself, then you're going to be able to find love in everything.
That's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing those. I've really enjoyed our connection today. I really enjoyed talking with you, learning more about you, about the foundation. And just let me have that website again where listeners can go if they're intrigued to figure out how to host their own dinner, whatever that looks like, and learn more about the programs and the work that you're doing.
So safehavenfoundation.ca is our website, and supperfromsafehaven.com is all about our big event coming up on October 26th.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing what's possible. When you know deep inside that you deserve more, you can have more, that the pain that you're going through right now can in fact be something that you can take a step away from and move into something that's going to be even more beautiful and even more challenging. It does take digging deep within, and sometimes it takes an event that triggers something that is, you know, just so unbearable that we absolutely cannot stay any longer in order to cause us to take action. Sometimes those quiet times, I think, that reflection and meditation and creating some space to have some quiet time and really tune into, you know, what is our heart telling us we need to do? And it's amazing what answers magically pop up when we create space to have that level of new self-awareness. And when you're running from something that's chaotic and, you know, you're living in a bus shelter, it's hard to have that sense of peace to be able to think through what it is. So when someone holds their hand out, just recognize that the world is built on reciprocity. And when someone is holding their hand out, it's just as much of a gift for them if you reach back and take their hand and let them help.
So well said.
Yeah. So another beautiful session of Words, Women, and Wisdom on the show today. Thank you, Karen Sherbert, for joining me and sharing about your world, your life, and how you've been able to turn your tragedy into triumph, and also now doing some amazing work with Massive Ripple. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful day, and I will be back with you in a couple of weeks on the next edition of the Words, Women, and Wisdom show. Bye for now, everybody.